I'm kind of playing John's age.
Okay.
Is he still showing?
I'll give it a try. You want me to go through the Fred introduction he always does? Yeah. I'll try and speak like Fred. I don't know if I'll get it done or not, but we'd like to welcome you out to the RAC meeting tonight. It's been proposed by some that we get going on it since it might be daylight when we get done. So anyway, before we get going, we'd like the RAC members to introduce themselves and just tell which group they're representing, starting over here.
Jay Price, elected officials.
Carl Persons, sportsman.
Tim Fair, at large.
Chris Marble, at large.
Gary Nielsen, I'm the sportsman's rep.
Matt Clark, sportsman's rep.
Sarah Flinders, U.S. Forest Service.
All right, thank you. Before we get going, John's not here, and in his absence, I forget your name.
Mike Slater.
Mike Slater is going to give us a regional update. Oh, first we got to do the minutes, huh? Yet I've had a chance to read through the minutes from last meeting. Is there any additions or corrections that need to be made in the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Okay. Motion to approve, seconded. Are you getting these guys?
Yeah.
Okay, all in favor? Motion carries.
That was the agenda and minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, got them both? Okay, we're good. All right, we'll go to the regional update.
Okay. I'll just try and speak up again. My name is Mike Slater. I work as the aquatics program manager here in the Springfield office. John's out hunting, getting ready for his muzzleloader hunt, and asked if I could kind of represent him. And I'd like to just give, for the RAC, for your benefit, a little bit of an update as far as some of the things that we've been working on by section in the regions, but then also the public, just so you can know some of the things that we've been working on just recently. So one of the wildlife guys, the wildlife section, the CWMU applications were completed and submitted to the Salt Lake office just recently. We've got a lot of emphasis on the walk-in access program, and they're trying to emphasize specifically angler access, really trying to get some opportunities. And one that I would highlight is Victory Ranch. And it's probably been about 4 months ago that that was actually signed up. I was there today working with that group, doing some monitoring of the fish flow as well. They've been really good to work with, and I think it's a good thing for the public to be able to have access to a place like that. Biologists have identified priority sage grouse habitats for the BLM's interim sage grouse guidelines that will influence energy development on the BLM properties. Riley Peck, who is one of our biologists, successfully defended his thesis on sage grouse. He's been attending BYU and has been working for the division while he's been attending school. So he's kind of made it through that process or that step. Biologists are reviewing hunts and hunt boundaries for the 2012 recommendations, and they're gathering disease information on moose currently. That's kind of a brief wrap-up on the wildlife. Some of our habitat folks have completed recently the Badger Hollow mowing, about 250 acres, and then they harrowed about 350 acres in that area. This is a project in the Strawberry Valley, and it's going to help the sagebrush. About 700 acres of wildlife or wildfire rehab project is planned for private lands on the Gilson Mountains. Conservation easement inspections are planned for this fall, where we go in, where we have these easements set up, they'll inspect them, make sure that everything's in line and that the landowners are still complying, but we're doing our part as well. We've got some planning for projects in the Dairy Fork and the Maple Canyon that they're working on, and these are projects that will take place in 2012. And they're taking care of archery only signage and map boxes, and this is for the Immigration Canyon area, trying to make sure that the public knows what their opportunities are. For aquatics, I know a little more about this. We've just completed our annual trap netting surveys on Utah Lake and those were completed in September. I would add that as a part of that sampling, we found a couple of northern pike in those nets, which was somewhat discouraging to us. We haven't seen those in any of our netting since 2002, and we caught two of those in our nets during the month of September.
Tell us how much size they were.
One of them was about 12 inches, and the other one was, in the freezer, 18, 19 inches, so at least two different size classes.
They caught another one today, Mike?
Today?
Yeah.
Okay. It was, that's news to me.
200 millimeters.
Okay. So another one that was maybe 9 inches or so. So I don't know if we've got people moving fish in on us, if we've got fish that are reproducing. Either way, it's somewhat discouraging. We don't need another big predator like that, especially with the June suckers.
So is it the June sucker that you're worried about mostly? I mean,
I would have to say mostly yes, just because of the priority of the June sucker and the recovery efforts that are going on there. But it will also impact the other fish species in the reservoir, whether it be your walleye, your perch, your bass, or whatever. It's a top predator, so it could have an impact there. Upper Pearl River fish surveys, mentioned that. That's what we took care of today and yesterday. Again, this is on the upper Provo along the Victory Ranch properties, some locations where we haven't had access to do some of this monitoring for several years. And I would say that there are some big fish in the upper Provo River. The largest we sampled was 8 pounds, 27 inches long. So some pretty fish.
Did you put it back?
We put everything back, and I'm sure you'll see that kind of stuff on the internet before we're done tonight, probably. Pretty good. We'll begin our false fish surveys both at Strawberry, Deer Creek, and Jordan Elm over the next couple of weeks, and that's by way of gill netting. It's just an annual sampling that we take care of every year. Kokanee spawning is currently ongoing right now. They collected eggs yesterday, and I think we're up to roughly 400,000 eggs that we've collected. The spawn is a little bit later than what we've seen in the past, and that's kind of followed true with everything that we've taken care of with fish this year, but that'll continue for probably about two more weeks. We'll be working on some habitat improvements within the next month, and this is for some lease chub, and this is out in the Mills Valley area in Juliet County. We'll be working on removing some Russian olives and stuff, and improving the ponds and the depths and stuff on those ponds. Just completed some cutthroat restoration work down Deep Creek near Levan. When I say restoration, we went through and we removed the non-native fish in preparation to put native cutthroat back in within the next month or so. And we will be reintroducing the Bonneville cutthroat trout into Red Butte Creek probably within this next month, and that's because of the oil spill that took place last year. It's been a long time in coming, a lot of public interest in that, again, trying to get those cutthroat back into that stream. Some of the conservation outreach stuff that Scott takes care of. Again, Kokanee Salmon Day was on the 24th of September. Another successful event there. A lot of people were able to come through and participate there. The Raptor Watch Day was held at Squaw Peak Overlook on Saturday. And the Swanson's Hawk released by Great Basin Wildlife Rehabilitation. That was released at that site, wasn't it? Committee is to begin work on increasing hunter recruitment and continuing education program after the Hunter's Ed courses. We want to see those kids continue on. Don't just go through Hunter Ed and that's the end of it. We need to do a little bit more in recruiting and retaining some of these young hunters or anglers. And watch out for Wildlife Week declared for September 18th through the 24th by Governor Herbert. And that's initiated by the Wildlife Preservation Society based in Park City. By way of law enforcement, they're busy out on the hunts, working right now. They should be checking the hunters, and they'll be doing that over the next month or so, too. And that's kind of a brief update on some of the activities within the region. Any questions or anything about that?
Well, thank you. Also, for those of you who are in the public, unless you're familiar with the process, we have comment cards over here. That if you would like to make a comment tonight, please fill out one of those cards, and then just bring it up to me, and then I'll know when to call on you. Put which item also as well that you'd like to comment on, so we don't get them all murfed up. But anyway, before we start on the action part, is there anything we need to talk about prior to that? Okay. Would you be willing to do that? Just tell us kind of what happened in the last Wildlife Board meeting.
I know I was there.
What do you remember?
They discussed the Cougar Proclamation. I know there was a number of houndsmen there that were a little upset at the number of cougar that are taking because they think the numbers are down. The division actually had a recommendation that they increase those cougar takings, and they did. The board did approve that.
Okay.
That was the main thing. It was the amount of cougar that are out there, and that they're still going to take a few more. They issued a few more permits this year than they have been last year.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was the main thing. The rest of the things were all that controversial.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. We'll proceed forth with the first action item, which is a private ponds fishing rule, and we'll ask Drew Cushing to make his presentation.
Thank you. Roger Wilson is the new section chief. I don't know if you guys have interacted with him in his current capacity, but he's sitting back here. And like I said, I'm Drew Cushing with the Sport Fish program. We have three rules, and the first two are really simple. They're basically one slide, just real simple changes. You guys can either vote on them at the very end, and I can present all three, which will get us done hopefully sooner, or you can take them one at a time. It's up to you guys.
What would you like to do?
Let's do them all.
Do them all and then talk. Okay.
All right. Okay. Let's moving go on. To start with, this spring, this whole year, things have changed somewhat. The spring informational rack was discontinued, as you all know. In past years, we came out in the spring and offered up some suggestions and then let the public and the racks kind of feed on those for the summer and then see how people felt about them through that time period, and then come back in the fall with our final recommendations. This year, we did not do that. Instead, we solicited the public for input in printed news, radio, and television, asked them to mail us some snail mail, email us, just however they could get their recommendations to us, and we would consider them. We also did an online survey, which was on our website. It was actually a Survey Monkey deal, and it stayed open and active for 6 weeks, and we received over 1,200 responses from our public. Which is a lot more people than we get at RAC meetings, and we felt good about that. And actually, some of the recommendations and some of the thoughts that the public had were in line with the things that were doable this year. And you'll see some of the things that we moved on. And then each region hosted some open houses, and that again was to encourage the public to come in and interact with the Division of Wildlife with no predetermined notion as to, you know, what that interaction was going to lead to, just to see what our angling public is thinking and try and get that feedback. So that's how it changed, and it was kind of a rough year because without the spring informational, we really didn't have a firm start date to get public feedback, and then, you know, we got it through the summer, and it was really hard to really interact with the public, but we did the best we could, and we felt good about the responses that we had. So the first rule is the private fish ponds rule, and this is about a four-year-old rule, and what this does is it allows us to interact with the private aquaculture folks who stock private ponds and the pond owners and make sure that they're doing good business, make sure that they're not doing anything that's detrimental to our native species here in Utah. And so there's just a few changes to this rule. Basically, these changes are, this is in the northern region, and what you see there are drainages where the northern region, our northern region, is going to do some rehab and remove non-native salmonids and then put back some native cutthroat. And so in the northern region, we have Otter Creek and its tribs, a Little Creek upstream from Little Creek Reservoir and its tribs, and Birch Creek from Birch Creek Reservoir upstream and its tribs. The HUC, the HUC, and the number behind it is just a national identifier that lets anybody in the nation know that we're talking about Otter Creek and the northern region. So, in the southern region, same thing. These are just places where they're going to do some restoration work and remove some non-native fish and then restore our native fish. And so in Garfield County, Center Creek, in Paiute County, Ten Mile Creek, Birch Creek, and Clear Creek. And then in Sevier County, Clear Creek, and this Pole Creek is actually, it's a smaller drainage. within Clear Creek, and so that would just come out of the rule, and it would be replaced by this Clear Creek and the huck that identifies that. And so that's all for that, and I'll just continue on, and we'll take care of them at one time at the end. The next one is the fishing contests and clinics, and this is a 3- or 4-year-old rule. And there's a growing interest, and have been over recent years, in fishing contests, and we've seen the number of contests go up. And we wanted to interact with those folks in the best way possible. This is just a minor adjustment to that rule, and just a one section. It has to do with the tagged fish contests, and we wrote this rule in a way to protect our regional folks against the workload issue and allow us to take care of these early and timely. The problem was is it also didn't allow us to be responsive to some really good opportunities that we had this last year. There was a tagged fish contest that Cabela's put on, and one of the waters that they wanted to have it on was Utah Lake, and they wanted to target, I believe, white bass and walleye. And we could not pursue that because of the way this rule was written. And it was really unfortunate because that contest would have benefited our recovery of June suckers. And so what we did is we made it easier for us to interact with these. So we removed the deadline, or we're recommending that we remove the deadline, and instead go with the standard COR waiting period of 45 days, and then remove the list of waters and remove the species of fish, and instead be able to identify these and interact with these guys on a case-by-case basis and look at the biology and look at the benefit to the resource and the benefit to the state of Utah and the Division of Wildlife. And so it'd make us a more interactive agency. And that's all for that rule. And now on to the last one. This is the fishing rule and guidebook. This is 657-13. And the first change would be the possession and transportation of dead fish. This is within that rule. It's section 16. And this would just make it easier for Lake Powell, which is a kind of a special water in Utah. We have a lot of people who boat camp. They go up for multiple days, fish for multiple days, have fish in their possession for multiple days. And the management of Lake Powell is really to harvest fish and striped bass, and you'll see in a little bit walleye. And so this would make it easier for people down there that go up and boat up and fish multiple days to be able to take care of their catch, have it in their possession, and still, you know, have a good time and fish and still maintain our management style down there. So down at Lake Powell, fish may be filleted any time, and anglers may possess those filleted fish at any time. And that's what we're recommending there. Moving on, these are regional recommendations in the northern region. This is basically a public feedback. You know, people, we've had trouble. Well, we haven't reached our quota for Willard Bay on wipers for years. And we're trying to raise our own. We're trying to propagate them down at our fish hatchery down in southern Utah. And we're getting there, but we're not there yet. And Willard Bay eats up most of the wipers that we have to purchase out of state. It's a really big quota. And so if we reduce the limit by 3, which was actually something that our anglers recommended we do to protect Willard Bay until we get our feet under us and reproducing and producing our own wipers, the recommendation is to remove or reduce the limit from 6 wipers to 3 until we get our propagation down there going on. East Fork, Smith's Fork, this is a place that's popular for hunters this time of year. And right now it's closed, period, to fishing. And the intent was always to protect it against the catching and keeping of kokanee with any red color. And so there are cutthroat in the stream. And the recommendation is to close it to the possession of kokanee with red color, but, you know, allow people to go up there and catch cutthroat, which is, you know, what that was intended to do all along. Lost Creek Reservoir, this would be an experimental limit. It'd be for a 5-year trial period. Right now it's 4 fish total, and with no size restriction. What they're recommending is a 4 fish or 4 trout in the aggregate. No more than 3 trout may be under 15 inches, and no more than 1 may be over 22. And all trout between 15 and 22 inches must be immediately released. We completed a 2005 angler survey statewide, and one of the things that our anglers wanted, and this was in that survey, was they would accept additional regulations if they could be if they could be guaranteed a bigger fish. And so this is one of those things. This fishery is also struggling. It has a Utah chub issue in it, and it has suffered in angler use in the past. It's also surrounded by other waters that are managed under the four fish, no size restriction anyway. Lost Creek is in with East Canyon, Rockport, Echo, so on and so on and so on. And so this would be a variety, an opportunity for other anglers that don't have this kind of opportunity in this area, and provide a variety of opportunities to anglers. The Northern Region, these are community fisheries. This is a program that the Division of Wildlife uses to recruit new anglers and encourage people to stay with it, even in the economy that we have. And right now, these would be listed as a community fishery with that two-fish limit, which is standard for all community fisheries. And so all of these, Garden City, Goodskey Lake, and Adams Reservoir, all would be brand new starting this January, and would all have that two-fish limit, regardless of species. Hobbs Reservoir, this is also, you could consider it a community fishery. It's up in Layton, in Layton proper. It's within 2 miles of Adams. It's also within about 5 miles of Farmington Reservoir, 5 miles of Kaysville. Since there's so many of these reservoirs clustered around, they wanted to offer a variety of experience for our anglers and offer something different. And this would be a trophy limit. It would be basically an experimental limit, 5 years, and the limit would be 2 trout under 15 inches, and all trout over 15 must be immediately released. Also, artificial flies and lures only. And this is one that at the end of 5 years, we'd see how our public felt about it, whether it worked as a trophy limit, whether we needed to tweak it, whether people would want it as a standard limit for community fisheries. In the Virgin River drainage, this is kind of a long-winded approach to explain what we have going on down there. We have two endangered species down there, the woundfin and the Virgin River chub. We are partners in a recovery program down there that invests millions of dollars a year to recover those two species. Smallmouth bass have been identified as a threat in the agreement that we signed in that agreement to recover those two species. Smallmouth bass have been confirmed in several reservoirs and the Santa Clara River and the Virgin River proper within the last year. So, that's it. In Quail Creek Reservoir, Sand Hollow Reservoir, Gunlock Reservoir, the Virgin River, and the Santa Clara River, there will be no limit on smallmouth bass. And this is, number one, to send the message that we won't manage them. Number two, that it's not okay, that this is something we won't tolerate. These fish, smallmouth bass, are a threat. They're a top-level predator in a river that's really, supposed to house those endangered fish. Lake Powell, the top one is just the fillet rule, and so fish may be filleted any time. Anglers may possess those filleted fish, and then this is the one that was recommended by the Rocky Mountain anglers. And our management staff down in Lake Powell, Wayne Gustavison, indicated that this is in line with what he's seeing with walleye populations in Lake Powell. We're recommending a no limit on walleye at Lake Powell. Monroe Pond and Sullivan Virgin River Park Pond, both of those are brand new community fisheries, and as such would have that standard, two fish regardless of species limit that goes with the community fisheries. Southeast Region, Wellington Pond, this is a new community fishery. It again would have the two fish limit. Farron Creek Reservoir, they're doing a restoration up there right now, removing non-native fish, brook trout, so on and so forth, and restoring native cutthroat to that drainage. Regional folks down there worked extensively with the public, and one of the things that they promised was that this drainage would be left for family fishing. Regardless of the restoration effort, they felt like they would, support the restoration if there were no special restrictions in the drainage. And so in order to benefit, the native species and the public, this is what we're doing. We're removing that, removing all special regulations, and basically just having a four-fish limit. Central Region, the first one, Manila Creek Pond, this is just a closure to access, to trespass. This is in agreement with the city. They want to close it when it's ice covered and keep it safe for anglers. And then the second one, last year we had white bass show up at Deer Creek Reservoir, and we have a no limit with a catch and kill on white bass. This year, black bullhead showed up. and there's a growing number of them. So it also would have a no limit on black bullheads. Anglers must not release any, and all black bullheads must be immediately killed. Now, this again sends a message, you know, we're not tolerating it. You know, this is a really popular trout fishery in the central region, and both black bullhead and white bass are detrimental to that fishery. Utah Lake, Mike mentioned the northern pike, and we have a recovery program there trying to recover June suckers. The northern pike today was caught in a place where there's been a lot of money spent on restoration. It's the Hobble Creek Restoration Area. That's where this pike was caught. And so no limit on northern pike and catch and kill on northern pike. And same thing, you know, we're not going to tolerate it. Spring Creek, this is the little creek right next to our regional office right up the road here. And since there's, you know, nothing going on in the region, and the hatchery both felt that angling there would not interfere with their operations, and there's an interest in the youth and some of the people that, you know, that live here, that this would be a popular fishing spot, so we're going to allow them to fish there. Red Fleet Reservoir. Walleye were illegally introduced in Red Fleet Reservoir last year. Actually, they were first found in 2000, I believe, 5, and then they were undetected for a number of years. Last year, they showed up, and there were three-year classes. And so last year, this was a catch and kill on walleye. This year, there's a health advisory, mercury advisory on Red Fleet. And it has to do with the amount of walleye you can consume. And so instead of filling people's freezer, we want them to have the choice on how many they take home and not basically force them to do something which may, if they eat enough, may impact their health. This is just informational. Panguitch Lake, in 2006, we spent $300,000 restoring Panguitch Lake. And we've spent that about every 10 or 12 years forever. You know, Utah chub were illegally introduced there, and a rotenone treatment removes Utah chub up there for a period of 10 to 12 years. Then they show up again, the fishery falls apart, and then we've treated again. And as such, there was a regulation put in place, there was a plan and a group that was put in place after that treatment to ask the anglers, you know, what do you want out of Panguitch Lake? First and foremost was to implement a strawberry reservoir kind of management plan where you have a predator that eats Utah chubs. It's a heck of a lot cheaper than spending $300,000 or $400,000 every 10 or 12 years. And so that's number one, and that has to remain in order to keep that, you know, a viable fishery. The other thing they identified as a group was to have a family-oriented fishery down there, so allow people to take fish. Over the last year, there's been a growing interest in Panguitch Lake, and there's actually a pretty well divided public down there. You have your trophy anglers who want to not keep any and have everything catch and release, special regulations, all of that good business. And then you have your people who just want to go down there and go fishing and take a few fish home. And it's really divided. And so one of the things that we're considering is to reform that group and, you know, bring those guys back together and see if we can't find some common ground, if we haven't found it already. And then furthermore, we'd like to implement an angler survey down there and use that as the basis for getting additional information on what anglers are really doing down there, how they're really feeling, and what they would be willing to accept. The problem down there is all places, you know, where you have, you know, a fishery like this, is you have people that are really in polarized viewpoints, you know, and it's really hard because if you do what one group says they want, then you're going to upset the other group, and you're always going to have, you know, one group or the other upset edge. So this is a really difficult situation, and we'd like to, you know, do the best we can for the entire group. And that's it. If there's any questions, I'd take them. Otherwise, I'm done.
Thank you, Drew. Any questions from the RAC? Yes.
So, Drew, I had a few questions. I know the division's talked about an initiative in the past to simplify fishing regulations. You talked about a recent survey. Did that survey tell us that maybe the public isn't so interested in simplifying regulations and want different regulations for different waters?
Yeah, they did. And, you know, they said it in 2005 in our angler survey, and they said it again in the online survey. It's just, you know, you want simplification because, like, mm-hmm. these polarized viewpoints, you know, you have people that want simplification and said that it's the complexity of our rules that are driving them out of the sport. At the same time, we're losing people because, you know, we offer a four-fish trout limit in all of our waters, and so you don't have that variety of experiences. And people, in order to capture the most of our anglers that we can, you need to offer that variety of experiences. But at the same time, you know, there are biologically sound regulations, and then there's social regulations. Mm-hmm. And what we've done in the past is try and weed through those that are social and come down to, you know, a set of regulations that we agree we can live with biologically and benefit the anglers. So okay. That's where we're heading.
So I had one other question. You talked about some recruitment initiatives earlier, and perhaps, again, this was in the survey results, but you talked about some of the limits on community fisheries. Do we know how the limit on harvest affects recruitment?
I don't think it does. And this is just, you know, we're doing a creel survey. We've done other creel surveys on community fisheries. We have a high percentage of youth that use community fisheries, but we also have a high percentage of older folks. And with the economy going to hell the way it did, we have a high, you know, really high number of people using them, period. And those people, there's about 20% of them in the creel surveys. We did creel surveys on three community waters up north, a Bountiful Pond, Syracuse Pond, and a pond in Roy. All told, those three ponds encompass about 15 acres. So it's just really tiny. There was about 60,000 angler hours on those acres. And a lot, 20% of those people said that they would not fish if it weren't for those fisheries. And so you have to try and accommodate everybody. And the economy, the way that it is right now, there's people that perhaps can't afford to go, and I'm one of them. I have to make fewer trips but spend more time out in the field when I go, because I have to make each trip pay the best that it can. Mm-hmm. And other anglers are in the same boat, and there's a number of anglers that can't afford to go out of town, period. Okay. And we have to concern ourselves with those, too.
Okay. Thanks, Drew.
Go ahead.
It's not part of your presentation, but I just have a question. Strawberry Reservoir, Schofield Reservoir, Panguitch, and the smallmouth at Jordanelle have their own fillet rule.
That's right.
Why doesn't that same rule apply to all of the slot limit or size limit waters?
Those were three waters that were identified as places where they have law enforcement, you know, spot checks, people leaving the body of water, you know, because of the regulations and because of the biological concerns up there. And we have roadblocks set up there on those reservoirs to check, you know, anglers as they're leaving. The other reservoirs, all of them, our law enforcement section said, we enforce the law up to the fish cleaning station, that's all. And so this was a way to separate those out from the ones where, you know, our law enforcement officers, so that's where our job ends. Does that make sense?
Any other questions from the RAC?
Yeah, Drew, what can you explain again the wipers at Willard Bay? Are they just not, they're not doing well, they're not reproducing? What's, I mean, they've been in there for how long?
They're doing well. They're a sterile fish, though. They don't reproduce.
So
what we've been doing since we started stocking wipers in Willard Bay is we've been buying them from a place back in Arkansas. And we can only afford so many. You know, our budgets are tight just like everyone else's. Last year we tried to raise our own. We tried, and we, you know, marginally successful. We took white bass from Utah Lake. We went down and collected striped bass from Lake Powell. Those are the two fish you need to make wipers. And we didn't get there. We didn't meet our quota. And so we're still buying them from out of state, at the same time trying to, you know, do what we can in-state to get our quota up to what we can stock. We haven't done that in recent years. And so we're, instead of spreading it, you know, thinner and thinner and thinner, we're trying to keep the fish in Willard Bay there for a little bit longer until we can get our, you know, our own propagation program going.
Okay. One other question. I know this really doesn't apply to our region, but a lot of people are screaming about this Boulder Mountain poisoning down there. Can you just briefly touch on what's going on down there and why you're doing that?
It's the same thing when we talk about these hucks, when we talk about removing non-native fish and restoring it to native fish. Basically, that's to secure fish that's, you know, could one day be endangered. And that's what this is about. Right now we have... It's kind of a unique situation. We have people who are born and raised there, the ranchers and farmers, they've kind of coalesced with a group of people that came from California, you know, retired folks. And they formed a, you know, pretty, you know, strong, unified front down there. They don't like the thought of restoring anything to native fish. They don't like the thought of rotenone, using rotenone to restore any fish. They view rotenone as a threat to their health. And it's never, you know, there's an article in the Tribune that talked about rotenone and the impacts of rotenone on people. What they didn't say is that, you know, those trials that they did, they injected rotenone into the carotid artery of rats every day for 6 months. And at the end of that trial, those rats had some health issues. But I challenge anybody, you could inject soda pop into the throat of a rat for 6 months and see how they, you know, see how they interact there. You know, it's one of those things where they didn't tell the whole truth. It was really, you know, kind of a jab at rotenone instead of really talking to what it really is. Rotenone comes from a tree root. It's a natural substance. You know, the natives in South America use it to go fishing. We've used it for years and years and years to, you know, treat trout. It's been used in the agriculture business for years and years and years to treat, you know, all kinds of insects. And so it's just one of those things, and it's unfortunate. We're going to deal with it. That anti-chemical battle is happening throughout the West. You know, California's having issues, Arizona's having issues, and now we're having issues. The state of Washington is now having issues on the use of rotenone to remove non-native fish, and it's a battle that we're going to have to fight. And the thing is if you lose it once, you're going to lose that battle from there on. And you know, there's an EA that was done down on the Boulder that was done well with the help of the Forest Service. And so, you know, it's one of those things that we're going to pursue and do what's in the best interest of the people and the fish.
Any other questions from the RAC? Yes.
Sorry, Drew, I just had one more question. Forgot to ask you about, can you tell us where we're at with, you know, Pinglich Lake had a broken dam. Can you kind of just tell us where we're at with that and what, do you think the biological effect of that has
been? There won't be a biological impact. If you guys are familiar with Pinglich Lake, it has two levels. Basically, they put a dam on top of the. And so the outlet structure that's broken is down at that first tier, which still allows about 50% to 60% of the reservoir to maintain, you know, water. And so they're going to repair that this fall. You know, in dry years, drought years, it's down there anyway. So it's kind of a non-issue. It looks bad, and I've heard a lot of people say, what about the fish? But you'd have to say, what about the fish in 2005 when we were in a drought situation anyway?
Any others? Okay, any questions from the audience?
Ken Strong, and I just have one question. At the first of your presentation, you talked about Little Creek and Otter Creek up north, and no planting of fertilized rainbow. What is the species of fish in there that we're trying to protect by doing that? I mean, you don't want the rainbow to reproduce. There must be a species in there to
protect. Native cutthroat in those areas.
Okay.
Any comments? Do we have any cards? One? Okay, Greg, you're up.
All right. This one.
Right there.
I'm Greg Porter. I'm representing myself. I am an angler. And I do hook and line, and I also do, you know, fly fishing. But I'm also a spear fisherman. And speaking with other people in the spear fishing community, which is a very, very, very small community here in Utah, we would like the spear fishing season to mirror the hook and line season. Currently, the spear fishing season begins the first Saturday in June. But since we're in the water, under the water, competing with boats and poor visibility are problematic factors. So early in the year and late in the year are safer times for us. Also, dealing with the algae bloom and visibility issues, when the water's clearer, it's safer for us.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So can you comment on that, Drew? Why is it to protect these guys from the 50-degree water? I mean, what's the...
It was open. We worked with spearfishing, and we would again. We worked with them extensively a couple years ago, I believe 3 years ago. And it was more friendly then than it is now. We had an issue down at Fish Lake, which, you know, there were some spear fishermen, and not you, but we had an incident where some spear fishermen went down there and took some trophy lake trout, which, you know, would have been okay. But then they interacted poorly on the internet with the regular anglers. And when you pit 100 anglers against 400,000 anglers and you make them mad, you know, you're going to probably lose a little. And so in my mind, there's room to grow, and there's flexibility that we can, you know, work with these guys, and we're willing to. It's just that, you know, you have to do it productively, and I think this is a good start. You know, I think that they have to earn some respect back from, you know, those 400,000 anglers first. I think that that's where you're going to lose this battle if you lose it. And so that's my opinion.
Okay, I remember that. I remember that meeting as well. It was, yeah, you bet.
We've worked with Greg a little bit too at our informal, our open house earlier this spring. Greg, and representing himself as well as the group that he fishes with or spearfishes with, came and presented this proposal to the division. He said, you know, we'd like to have the season changed for the spear fishermen, just like the regular anglers throughout the state. We took that information internally. We talked a little bit about it and felt like the timing maybe wasn't the best. Not that we disagree or anything like that, but perhaps down the road in the near future is something that we will bring up that we can discuss further and probably go back to somebody like Greg, who represents himself well and the group and stuff, and work with the spearfishing community and say, hey, this is where we're at, this is what we need to do, and these are maybe some things that we need to change the perception is being received by the general public or the general angler. So I think we're on the right track, okay. And we're certainly headed down that road.
Okay. How do you feel about that?
Well, obviously, nothing I can do about the past. And but for me, it's about safety rather than these other issues. I understand the Fish Lake issue and some poor representatives of the spearfishing community, which is having lasting effects, and I understand that. And I, speaking with most people, this is, I think, what was described as a social issue rather than a biological issue, and understood. However, would still like...
Okay. All right, well, thanks. You know, on the social and the biological, I've watched these guys for a lot of years, and they're getting pretty good at making the two merge. And it has to happen, or change is not possible. I remember the Fish Lake pictures. That's still a vivid memory, and basically what was said about their experience and stuff. And I tend to agree with these guys on their decision, but I think it's definitely worth pursuing. I know we talked a little bit about it last time, of keeping them away from the spawn and stuff like that. I know there was some timing issues on certain lakes with that, but other than that, right? Any other? Yes.
May I comment to that?
You bet.
All anglers use the spawn to their advantage and use times where you harvest fish and you know that they're feeding to fatten up for the winter, or when ice off is coming. And I would hate for that one incident to taint the whole sport, and those representatives tainting the whole sport. But everyone knows Jordanelle's a great time to go in the spring when the bass are spawning, and because genetically they're aggressive and they'll chase stuff, right. And that's fun. And so spear fishermen do that too, but everyone does.
I agree. Any other comments? Okay, I'll close the comment period and bring it back to the rack for their disposition. Do we want to treat these separately, these three rules, or treat them as one? You good with that? Okay. Please.
I'll make the motion that we accept the private fish rules, or ponds rules, R657-59, and the fishing contest and clinics rules, R657-58, and the fishing guidebook and rule, R657-13, as presented by the division.
Okay, a motion's been made by Carl. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion's been seconded. Ready to proceed? All in favor? 7. Motion carries. Do we have any further business we need to attend to tonight? All right. Dinner. Okay. Well, thank you for your time. Appreciate those of you who have come and made the effort to come here and see what's going on and participate in the process. And we'll see you next month.
Next RAC meeting is November 10th.
Junior high. Okay, next RAC meeting is November 10th at the junior high.
I think it's Bucks and Bulls. And we might get 30 people instead of 20.
Yeah.
Hopefully we get lots.
Yeah. We'll call Fred.
Yes, please.
Well done.
Okay. You don't need Fred.
We're done. Yeah,
we're...